oral argument of the term. And before we start the oral argument and the business of the court, I'd like to take this time to recognize Patience Drake Rogensack, my colleague and my friend, for her exemplary service as a Chief Justice. Since 1996, she's been a committed public servant. In her 7 years on the Court of Appeals and her 18 terms on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, she has conducted herself with great aplomb. Her colleagues and the people of this great state have been the beneficiaries of her keen intellect, her ability to meet any situation with dignity and with grace, and I'm proud to call her my colleague and my friend. I'd like everyone, if you're willing, to briefly unmute your computer and give Patience Drake Rogensack applause, even though that's very small in comparison to her public service, but it's all I can do.
Thank you all very, very much. It certainly has been my privilege to serve as a justice on this court and for 6 years as the Chief Justice. Thank you, Chief Justice Ziegler.
Well, now we will get down to the matter at hand, and it is St. Augustine School versus Carolyn Stanford Taylor. As I understand the lineup this morning, it is to begin with Attorney Rick Essenberg, 25 minutes, then Hannah Juris, 30 minutes, and then back to Attorney Essenberg for 5 minutes. I know you both have done this drill before, but in the upper left-hand corner, you will see the marshal putting some signs up, start, 5 minutes left, and then stop. And we would ask that you try to follow those. If you're in the middle of answering a question and the stop sign comes up, you don't have to ask permission, just go ahead and answer. Or if a justice is in the middle of asking a question, you don't have to stop or ask permission, just go ahead and answer. But we will try to stick to the timelines. And with that, I think we begin this morning with Attorney Richard Essenberg.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. Over 50 years ago, the Wisconsin legislature enacted the statutory scheme at issue in order to ensure the safe transportation of school children, whether they attended public or private schools. Now, for the first time in approximately 50 years, that statutory scheme is back before this court. And it's before this court because my client, St. Augustine, and its families have been denied those benefits, and they've been denied those benefits for one reason and one reason only, because they made a religious judgment. This is what they did. They determined that they could not remain affiliated, or they could not affiliate at all, with the Archdiocese of Milwaukee and its schools. They did so for religious reasons. In order to accomplish that, they severed all connections with the Archdiocese and its schools. In its application, it made clear that it was not organized, controlled, or governed by any religious denomination. There is no common ownership. There is no common management. There is no supervision in the Archdiocese. There is no commitment to follow any archdiocesan prescribed curriculum. There is nothing. There is only this. In describing its religious views, which it makes clear are quite distinct from those of the Archdiocese and its schools, it continues to use the word Catholic, making clear, of course, that it means that in a very, very different way. And because it has not disavowed the use of the word Catholic, because it has, in effect, not denied its religious belief that it is following in the Catholic tradition.
Counsel, I'd like to interrupt you just a minute to answer a question.
Certainly.
It's part of the question the court asked you all to answer in your briefing. Not a lot was done with that, I have to say. My question to you this morning is Venko consistent with the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Espinosa?
Vanco is consistent with the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Espinosa if and only if it defines religious denomination by neutral and secular criteria. In other words, if in determining what a religious denomination is, it looks only for non-religious connections, such as, you know, common ownership, common control, that type of thing. Once it does what happens here, and it goes beyond, if Vanco were to permit what happened here, that the SPI can go beyond that and say, because somebody uses a particular religious term, they must be religiously affiliated with another school that uses that term. They are doing two things that are not permitted. Number one, they are penalizing a religious school for coming to the conclusion that their understanding of this term is different than someone else's, and they need to follow their own understanding by conscience.
How is WSSTAT 121.51, parent one, parent, the last sentence of that, to be interpreted by reading out religious denomination? And my concern really focuses on how is a secular school a religious denomination? I don't quite understand your answer.
It's not that it's a secular school. It's that the connections that the question that we have before us and the SPI had before, it was Governor Evers back then before him, was are these schools affiliated? That is, are they, to use the dictionary definition, closely affiliated? I believe that if Vanco is to be regarded as constitutional, and if it has to accomplish its purpose, which was to save this statutory scheme from potential constitutional infirmity, what's necessary is that determining whether they're closely affiliated in the same religious denomination must be done by looking only at secular connections. And religious schools have secular
connections. I'm sorry, I'm not doing a good job of asking questions, I guess. How are the terms religious denomination applied to a secular school?
The term religious denomination could not be used, would not be applied to a secular school. I think what the court in Vanco is doing was saying,
I know what the court did in Vanco Council. I'm asking you to answer my questions today. Right. They might be a little different than the court's. Yeah.
I may not be doing a good job, but I'm trying to get there. I think that the use of the term religious denomination cannot be applied to a secular school. I think that in the statute, as the Vanco court read it, the legislature was trying to address the fact that there could be connections through a religious denomination that are determined by evaluating secular criteria. Its application of this prohibition against overlapping attendance areas, I think, was based upon Chapter 121.54's reference to attendance area in connection with all private schools. But it seems to me that here today, no one is asking this court to overrule Vanco.
That doesn't mean that we might decide it is well to overrule it, Counselor. We may not. I understand what you all wrote. I frankly think you didn't address the added questions that we needed your help on. Nobody really talked about it much in your briefs. You focused on the certified question, which is wonderful. You know, you all did a very good job, but neither of you did much with the added questions. So that's my concern today, is not to go back, at least for myself. I'm concerned about Vanco. I'm concerned about it because it seems to cause a continuing problem. Caused a problem, obviously, back in 71. It caused a problem when Holy Trinity was decided, who stepped as far away from Vanco as they could by determining what affiliated meant rather than relying on Vanco's reasoning. It's causing problems now. And the U.S. Supreme Court vacated the Seventh Circuit's opinion in St. Augustine and asked that it be reconsidered in light of Espinosa. Okay, so that's what concerns me, is what the U.S. Supreme Court did to the Seventh Circuit. And are we being helpful by ignoring whether Vanco was correctly decided?
Well, I think that the, in my view at least, the United States Supreme Court granted our petition for cert and vacated the divided panel decision of the Seventh Circuit because it had applied Vanco improperly. I think had it applied Vanco properly, we wouldn't have this problem because it would not have allowed the state superintendent of public instruction to make what was essentially a religious judgment by concluding that everyone who uses the term Catholic must be affiliated in some way. And the reason that the SPI can't do that is because whether it's done superficially or whether it's done through a thorough examination, which we, of course, would never want to permit, it's making a religious judgment. It's penalizing someone for adopting their own distinctive understanding of the term Catholic. And it is entangling the SPI, even if it's done superficially, because they're deciding who is and who is not within the denomination. I don't think Vanco is problematic because, properly read, Vanco and Holy Trinity do not permit that. If they permit only looking at secular connections. And I think that I would argue that I think that has worked for the most part, because Holy Trinity was 50 years ago. And for 50 years, the statutory scheme has operated, and we haven't had these kind of problems until what happened here happened. And that was that the state superintendent of public instruction decided to evaluate St. Augustine, not on its absence of secular and legal connection, but based upon its use of a religious term, which it heard and then concluded that Catholic means everybody that uses the word Catholic must mean the same thing. And of course, we know that when it comes to religion, people use terms like evangelical, Lutheran, Judaism, Islam all the time, and they mean very, very different things.
But the problem, counsel, is that the statute itself is, and I think this is Justice Rogenczak's point, the statute itself is causing problems. Maybe they haven't arisen until this case, but nonetheless, the very nature of the question that the Seventh Circuit has asked us to answer, which draws in the language of the statute, is causing the problem because it refers to religious denomination. And so that appears to be what the Seventh Circuit has struggled with, is what does it mean to be a religious denomination? And as you were just talking about, people call themselves Catholic or Muslim or Jewish, but they have very different beliefs, as has been briefed to us. So I guess I'd like to explore further, why shouldn't this court revisit the Vanco decision? It was not a textualist decision. The court, I don't know how anybody could argue the court did not rewrite the statute to save its constitutionality. The court's not supposed to do that. The court can, of course, adopt an interpretation that would avoid a constitutional problem. But here, there was no interpretation to avoid the constitutional problem, so the court just rewrote it. So why shouldn't we declare that the court made a mistake however many decades ago and declare the statute unconstitutional, or at least the last sentence of it?
Yeah, well, I think there are three things that, three ways that this court could approach that, Justice Bradley. And I think under all of them, St. Augustine is entitled to benefits. First, it could certainly come to the conclusion that Vanco is a 50-year-old decision, and the fact that we haven't been before the court for 50 years and are here only because the SBI did something so extraordinary that it resulted in a grant of cert and a GVR is some indication that it's workable. And given the reliance that schools and families have had on the statutory interpretation, that sticking to precedent might be the best thing to do. The second thing I think is, I think this court could substantially alleviate the textualist problems by understanding, or I think affirming rather, that when the statute uses the term religious denomination, that applying it cannot be done through the use of religious judgments or assumptions. That is, we can only look at secular connections between a school. And, you know, those connections could be on Holy Trinity, I think, recognized that a lot of times that the schools will simply admit that they're part of the same religious denomination because they want to be part of the same religious denomination. They want to claim it's a imprimatur for themselves. They read themselves into the statute. But I think when, as here, that isn't present, then only secular connections can be looked at.
Before you get to your next
moment, just a moment, we'd still be applying a restriction that applies only to religious schools. I know the Vanco court said, well, no, this also applies to secular schools. But of course, by the text itself, it does not. So how can we constitutionally apply a statutory provision that singles out religious schools for different treatment?
I'm not sure that it wouldn't apply to secular schools if they had the same type of secular connection. That is, if they conceded that they were part of a network, or if they had some provision for common supervision or control. One of the things that we typically would associate with religious denominations, those things that are not present here. The third thing I think this court could do is, if it was concerned with the textualist problem, and to be sure, the Vanco court and the Holy Trinity court, you know, did, you know, work hard to apply the doctrine of constitutional doubt and save the statute. It would simply strike that provision which treats religious schools differently than other schools with respect to attendance areas.
Attorney Essenberg, I have a couple questions. The first question, I hear you saying that the issue that you see is that you can't have any kind of really investigation into religious beliefs, which is exactly what Espinoza is talking about. But how come this court can't take them at their word, regardless of how that comes? So the Seventh Circuit question certification gives all kinds of ways. It includes ownership control, articles of incorporation, self-identification. How come the school district couldn't look at all the pieces without doing any investigation? And why wouldn't that be neutral?
Because I think if you were to say that you're just taking them for their word, then you have to take into account everything that they said. And in this instance, St. Augustine said, we are independent of any denomination. We are not organized, controlled, or governed by any denomination. We refer to our religious views as Catholic, but we also make clear to you that when we use that term, we mean it in a different way than the archdiocese does religiously. And so the only way you can, with all due respect, I don't think that St. Augustine is being taken by its word. It's not being taken as its word.
Maybe that's true. We're not dealing with the merits here. You may be absolutely right. The only question we're being asked is what can the school district look at? So perhaps the school district is stuck with the representation. And if they can't investigate, it appears that they would be stuck with St. Augustine saying, we're Catholic, but we're not affiliated with this other school in any way, shape, or form. We practice differently. And then that's it, right? I mean, why isn't that neutral? You're drawing a line between secular documents, which I'm not even sure what those are in some sense, because to some extent, the documents sometimes have something religious in them, right? Some kind of word that identifies them as religious. St. Augustine could be interpreted as religious, the words, right? It's a saint. This distinction between a secular document and another document, shouldn't we be looking instead at neutral criteria without any investigation, taking people at their word, taking schools at their word, versus what you're saying, which is you can only look at articles of incorporation, which, by the way, are not even in this record?
Well, I agree with you that we can only look at neutral and I would say secular connections. I'm not saying that all of this stuff has to be included in a document. It could also be included in the application or the representations of the school. I don't want to get bogged down about articles incorporation and bylaws because, you are asked to answer a certified question here. And I think that in the context of this case in answering the certified question, I would hope that the court would take into account the context in which it arises and make clear that although one certainly can take into account what the school has said and should, that one has to take into account what they've said and not make a set of religious assumptions and judgments about that. St. Augustine here described themselves as Catholic. They didn't say they were part of the Roman Catholic denomination. In fact, they said they're not. And what happened here and what the Seventh Circuit is calling self-affiliation, or at least the two members of the three-member panel are calling self-affiliation, is that they used a religious descriptor. But we know that religious descriptors are used in different ways by different people. And because we don't want courts and government to get involved in making religious judgments, they have to accept what the religious adherents tell them about those religious descriptors. And if they say they are distinct, they must accept the fact that they are distinct and proceed accordingly.
Can I follow up on that question? I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. And I'm trying to just sort of parse through this Seventh Circuit question a little bit. And I'm just going to read it so we have it before us. For purposes of determining whether two or more schools are private schools affiliated with the same religious denomination for purposes of 121.51.1, must the state superintendent rely exclusively on neutral criteria such as ownership, control, and articles of incorporation, or may the state superintendent also take into account the school's self-identification in sources such as its website or filings with the state? And I want to make sure I understand your argument. What I hear you saying is maybe those aren't sort of mutually exclusive choices, at least depending on how you read the question. That you would say, listen, if a school said on their website, we are affiliated with the United Methodist Church or the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, that could be something that could be taken into account, that the superintendent could look at that. So some self-identification, some profession could be relevant, but that it can't make a judgment, no, you really are Catholic. And that's your objection here. Like you really are affiliated with the Roman Catholic Church and making a judgment upon that when there are explicit statements otherwise. So I want to make sure I'm understanding that argument. Is that right? That you can take some of that into account, but not in a way that it requires a judgment upon whether you're really affiliated with a religious denomination, at least in some sense.
Right, a judgment or an assumption that because you use a common religious word, you must be closely connected. Here's an example, and it's not in the record, but it is from real life, but let's treat it as hypothetical because it's not. The Hope Christian Schools describe themselves as a network of Christian college preparatory schools in Racine and Milwaukee. They have conceded that they are a network. Now, whether they are commonly owned or they probably are, but it doesn't really matter at that point because they have said that they are operating together as a network. If they didn't say that, if they said that they were independent, but that they were Lutheran, that wouldn't put them in affiliation with everybody else that uses the term Lutheran. They could only be in affiliation with those who use the term Lutheran if there was some type of neutral and subjective criteria between them. And whether that's in the Articles of Incorporation, the bylaws, or whether it's in something else, like, you know, a franchise agreement or a commitment to, you know, to operate or to accept supervision from a, you know, some type of supervisory body. I don't think we have to get into that. I think in answering the certified question, we simply have to say, look, that in evaluating the documents and evaluating what the school has said, whether it's self-affiliation, whether it's not, the SBI must limit herself to secular and neutral criteria.
And aimed at what? So, I mean, you know, underlying this is what can you consider? That's the question we've been asked. But, you know, they may be shooting past each other piece that is involved in this too, is the determination is what? And it seems that the argument you're making is some sort of mutual, semi-formal organizational tie or something like that. I'm not sure exactly how you'd phrase it. Those are my words there, but some sort of mutually agreed organizational tie between the church and some religious organization of some sort.
Right. And one that is not based upon religious affinity or doctrine. So, you know, Vanko, I think, used the example of the Franciscan and Dominican orders. Now, they could not be deemed to be affiliated because they have common theological presuppositions. They could be deemed to be affiliated if they both say, look, you know, we accept the superintending authority of the archbishop, and we'll do what the archbishop tells us to do. That's a secular and objective connection. It doesn't involve the court in either A, in entangling itself in making a religious judgment about, you know, what constitutes the boundaries of the denomination and who is in it because of their religious views. And it doesn't penalize someone for making a claim of religious distinction.
Really
one quick follow-up. Could those representations, such as the Hope School, be something on a website? If they said on their website, we are a network of Christian schools operated by the same entity, isn't that something under those circumstances that could be taken into consideration?
Justice Dallin, I believe that again, it's hypothetical because it's not on the record, but In the real world, I did take that from their website.
So, Mr. Esper, look, I just want to go back to the certified question, and I know Justice Hagedorn read it, but this is the way I'm looking at it. Tell me what I'm missing here. The way I look at this question is that the Seventh Circuit is saying, must the state superintendent rely exclusively on neutral criteria, such as ownership, control, and articles of incorporation? So when I'm reading this question, what I am reading is, may I continue, Chief Justice Ziegler?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
thank you to both of you.
Old habits are hard to break.
Right. I lost my train of thought. Okay. The way I am reading this question is, they are saying that it's a given that the state is going to look at this neutral criteria of ownership, control, and articles of incorporation. And then they're saying, may the superintendent also look at other things such as, then they're giving examples, right? Websites or filings with the state. So I think what you're saying is, as long as the decision maker, whether it is the superintendent of public instruction or whether it is the superintendent at the school district or whomever it is, as long as that person isn't telling St. Augustine what they are, they can look at whatever they want?
Well, they can look at whatever they want as long as it doesn't involve an assumption about or an examination of religious premises. And here, I think where the SPI went off the rails is in concluding that because it used the word Catholic, which in this context could only have been a religious assertion because there is no secular or neutral connection between St. Gabriel and the Archdiocese schools and St. Augustine, it has transgressed the Constitution and has transgressed the limiting construction of Vanco in Holy Trinity. So, you know, it couldn't, for example, if we had a, you know, we can use so many examples. If we had a Sunni and a Shia Muslim school, if we had an Orthodox and a Messianic Jewish school, if we had, you know, the African and Methodist Episcopal Church, you couldn't decide, well, that they must be in somehow aligned with the Methodists or the Episcopalians. You can't do that because that is making a religious judgment or a religious assumption. And so we would urge that the question be answered not in terms of, you know, some descriptor of what you can look at or what your sources of information are, but what type of information you can look at, however it may come to you, and excluding the notion that you can under any circumstances make some type of religious judgment or assumption or evaluation.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Then we begin with Ms. Juris.
Thank you, Your Honor. Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I am Assistant Attorney General Hannah Juris, and it is my great privilege to appear before the court this morning on behalf of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, Carolyn Stanford Taylor. The narrow certification question before this court asks whether government officials tasked with determining if private schools are affiliated with the same religious denomination, either A, may consider schools' own outward professions of their denominational affiliation, or B, must ignore those professions and demand inquiry into internal structures of religious organizations. The answer to the certified question has to be option A. As this court recognized in Holy Trinity, in the usual case, affiliation is acknowledged and uncontested. So to be clear, a win for St. Augustine on this certified question is a loss for religious schools across the state of Wisconsin. The answer has to be option A, because option B, that being St. Augustine's position, is first, fundamentally incompatible with the statute itself, and second, is incompatible with the First Amendment. It is incompatible with the First Amendment because it demands more entanglement than is necessary to resolve the question, while also requiring government officials to disregard religious identity. Perhaps the easiest way to see why St. Augustine's position can't be correct within the certified question is this. St. Augustine asked this court to take the statute, which asks whether private schools are affiliated with the same religious denomination, delete the words religious denomination, and replace those words with corporation. We know that can't be correct. And the reason we know that is we can look to Chapter 187. Chapter 187 is a specific statutory chapter that provides for the incorporation of religious societies for, among other things, educational purposes. And what Chapter 187 tells us is that a single church within a denomination may be its own corporation. A sect may be its own corporation.
So in order to avoid entanglement with interpretation of religious terms, why don't we just let the schools say whatever they want to say? And if they say, you know, whatever we need to be, we are. We're not affiliated. This is Archdiocese of Milwaukee. So if they just say we're not affiliated with the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, why isn't that enough? Why do you not get anything else?
Respectfully, Your Honor, there has never been, and of course I know the facts of this case aren't before the court, but there's never been any argument that the Archdiocese of Milwaukee is a religious denomination. And I would note that, and so I think that's where we have to go back to the language of the statute and what and the breadth of the term religious denomination. And I would note today here, my friend on the other side has asserted that St. Augustine has repeatedly presented that it was independent of any denomination and independent of the Roman Catholic Church. On the contrary, at least multiple points, St. Augustine identified itself as Roman Catholic. And I can point the court
you know, but you're deciding what they mean when they say Roman Catholic. Just as there are a lot of varieties of Roman Catholics. See, if you're going to do what you're going to do, I don't see how the statute can stand. I honestly don't see how it can stand.
The reason, Your Honor, is because the government officials in this circumstance are not drawing that connection. The religious organization is, right? And so this gets to exactly what the court held in Holy Trinity, which is that if the professions of the school answer the dispositive question, then to intrude further necessarily would be for the government to determine what is or is not Catholic.
You are still interpreting the words that are used in a religious sense. That's what you're doing.
But it's not the government who is saying they are Roman Catholic. It is the organization who's saying they are Roman Catholic. And that once they've said that, for the government to intrude or demand further documentation or to look further into the structure of the organization or other organizations would necessarily be to
but
try to disprove
that. But
you
only use the term Roman Catholic because the last sentence of the statute says religious denomination.
And so
okay, so you're putting yourself in a position in the statute that could not have been upheld. Well, Vanco did what Vanco did, but if we were looking at it today under Espinosa, I would be amazed if the result would be the same.
So I would have two points to respond, Your Honor. I think if St. Augustine's position is correct, and if by that I mean if government officials truly cannot ever consider what they call titles, right, or the names of religious denominations, it is respectfully hard to see how the government or courts would ever even be able to consider that an organization is religious, even to determine that its rights have been violated under the First Amendment, right? Because even if Your Honor looks at Espinosa itself, the Supreme Court in that case discussed, amongst other things, its earlier holding in the Everson case, where it held that, right, government benefits couldn't be denied to individual Catholics, Lutherans, and so on. And now perhaps, and so I think at some level, if the government can't and rightfully can't intrude into the internal structure of religious organizations, then it needs to be able to take religious institutions at their word about those denominational affiliations.
But you're still interpreting the words religious denomination. That's how you're making your decision under the statute. Regardless of whether you say Vanco is still good law or not, what you are doing is interpreting religious denomination. You're saying, well, why can't we use what they call themselves? Okay, well, I mean, that's a fair way to argue it, but you're still interpreting the same words, which are the words that are giving me a lot of trouble.
And I would agree with Your Honor that this statute necessarily requires government officials to walk a very careful line. And it's a line that the superintendent takes very seriously. But I think this court, right, so what Espinosa held is that in following Trinity Lutheran, is that when government extends public funds to subsidize private education, it can't exclude religious organizations solely because they are religious organizations. And there is no argument here today that organizations are being excluded solely because they are religious. And I think that's exactly the potential constitutional problem that this court took off the table in Vanco.
Counselor, do they need to take all the words and give all the words, the descriptive words, equal weight? Or can they pick which words they wish to give more weight to?
Well, I think, Your Honor, the answer to that question is to look back to the statute, right? And so this goes to what the words that answer the dispositive statutory question, and that's affiliation with the same religious denomination. We know that religious denomination is a broad term, and what's critical to answer the certified question here is that it is a necessarily broader term than corporation.
So does it matter? Would it matter if the descriptor, instead of Roman Catholic, were just Catholic?
So that, I think Your Honor's question goes to the one iteration of the question that St. Augustine really stressed in its reply brief, and that is, in precise factual circumstances, exactly just what will be the very scope of the term religious denomination. And I would just say, to answer the certified question here, all this court needs to recognize is that religious denomination is a broad term, and it has to be a broader term than corporation. And that answers...
Oh, sorry. When Justice Dallet asked the question about looking at the website or looking at practices, things like that, what would your answer to that be? In part, I'm asking that because let's just say the website or the practice of a school is to recite the Apostle Creed. You know, in that it says, I believe in the Holy Spirit, the Holy Catholic Church, it goes on and on. So the word Catholic is there, even though, you know, for example, I'm Lutheran, but we recite that. Would that be the same and enough to be a defining term?
No, Your Honor. And the critical distinction there is that the government cannot look at practices of the religious organization to then make the determination, right?
Well, so let's go back to labels then. The Ukrainian Catholics call themselves Catholics. Are they affiliated with the Roman Catholics? My question is targeted toward how broad is denomination?
Well, and I think that we have to go back to the language of the statute and applying principles of statutory interpretation that this court applies all the time. What we see is that it is a broad term. I think when we look at Chapter 187, you can see that it is a broader term than an individual church. It is a broader term than a sect. And what that tells us is that because under Chapter 187, an individual church or a sect within a denomination may be its own corporation, there's just no way for the court to adopt St. Augustine's proposed corporate rewrite of the statute, because that isn't always going to answer the required question under the statute.
How is this not the government meddling in religion, which is exactly what's prohibited by the First Amendment? How does this not violate Trinity Lutheran? You have the government, the superintendent in this case, having to look at what is this religious organization. By its very nature, that requires the government to delve into what it means to be Catholic or what it means to be Lutheran. My second question for you, and I know others have questions for you, relates to how is the statute applied to secular organizations and schools? It isn't, because here we have a Catholic school that is being denied a public benefit because it calls itself Catholic, and there's another Catholic school that is already receiving this benefit. So I'd like you to address the argument that St. Augustine is being discriminated against because it is Catholic.
Okay, so I will try to take your questions one by one, but if there's a component that I didn't cover, please just let me know. So the first question Your Honor asked is, how is this not requiring the government to delve into religious organizations? And the answer to that question is because it's not the government drawing those connections. It is the school itself. So to use, right, the government is not as assigning what St. Augustine refers to as the titles, the organization is. And so I think consistent with Holy Trinity, this court recognized that it when they have identified themselves as Catholic or Roman Catholic, for the government to say, actually, we're not so sure, we need to instead look at the internal workings of your corporate structure, the structure of any other school that we're providing benefits to, that would necessarily be the government instead making the determination.
But here, let me stop you there, because here St. Augustine is saying, we are not affiliated with the Roman Catholic Church, with the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, as I understand their argument. So they're telling you, I'm not affiliated. And as I understand it, the superintendent said, but on your website, you're Catholic. So that's why I asked you the question about Ukrainian Catholic, because I think everyone would stipulate and acknowledge Ukrainian Catholics are not affiliated with the Roman Catholic Church. But I'm trying to understand the breadth of your reading of denomination, because as I understand it, you would say all Lutherans are Lutheran, all Catholics are Catholic, all Muslims are Muslim, and there are no other denominations within, I am just using those three categories, obviously there are others, but within those, as I understand your argument, you'd say those are all denominations. So you know what, Eastern Orthodox, you call yourselves Catholic, you're Catholic. So sorry, there's another Catholic school getting transportation benefits, so you're out.
So that's not precisely our argument. The I think Your Honor is right to think that there may be future factual or future scenarios where in specific contexts, right, there is a factual question about just how precisely broad is the term denomination. Our position is that to answer the certified question, all the court must do is recognize that it is a broad term, and it is necessarily broader than corporation, because that answers the certified question, because it means looking at corporate connection can't be the only way to resolve it.
How would we write an answer to this certified question? I mean, the federal court's obviously looking for direction. What do we mean by denomination? I don't know how we answer that question, if we are even able to do it without doing great violence to the First Amendment. I don't know how to answer that question without defining the parameters of denomination, which is why I keep asking you.
Sure.
Parameters.
And so I think we are arguing that the parameters are broad, and you get there by looking at by applying principles of statutory interpretation. And you can do that by looking at the dictionary definition of denomination. You can do that by looking at Chapter 187, which uses the term religious denomination repeatedly. I would note that 187, and it's 187.01 sub 7, specifically talks about the merger of one corporation with another corporation of the same religious denomination. So we know that the term has to be broader than corporation, which answers the certified question. Now, I think beyond that, how that will precisely work in specific factual scenarios that aren't before the court, I would respectfully say that as this court did in Vanco, as it did in Holy Trinity, it not take on further constitutional questions than it needs to answer the question. And when I think to then turn to the constitutional component of Your Honor's first question, when we look at Trinity Lutheran, when we look at Espinoza, the holdings or what those cases tell us is that the inquiry is, if government benefits are being extended to private schools, is our statutory structure denying the benefit solely because they are religious schools? And the answer to that is no. We know that. We know that they're not being denied benefits solely because they are religious schools.
But the statute itself says, and Justice Hagedorn read it, but I'm going to read part of it again, the attendance areas of private schools affiliated with the same religious denomination shall not overlap. So that is, by its text, singling out religious organizations for a restriction that does not apply to secular schools. I know the court in Vanco said, oh no, this does apply, but I'd like someone to explain to me how we can apply religious denomination to a secular school. We can't.
So I can understand how a first blush reading of Vanco may appear as though the court is perhaps pushing the boundaries of statutory interpretation further than it would in certain circumstances. But I think when Your Honor really goes back and when you read 12154 and 12151 in context, which is what this court did in Vanco, we see that the court got it right in Vanco. And so
it's not first blush. I mean, really, it's a pure textual reading. The court in Vanco unquestionably rewrote the statute. It essentially read religious denomination out by saying religious denomination applies to secular schools. Believe me, we have all very carefully studied the cases and the text of the statute. You can't square the court's decision in Vanco with the text. It's impossible.
And I, of course, didn't mean to suggest otherwise, Justice Bradley, in terms of the court's review. But what I do mean to say is this. Your Honor's question asked how the court in Vanco essentially turned religious denomination into something other than religious denomination. And I think that's not precisely what the court did in Vanco. What the court did in Vanco is it said, if we look at 12154 in context, what we see is that the clear intention of the legislature was to provide transportation benefits to public and private school children alike in a reasonably uniform manner. And the way that the legislature achieves the reasonably uniform manner is to prohibit overlapping attendance areas. And so the answer for secular private schools comes elsewhere, right? And so we know that we can't have overlapping attendance areas for essentially the same type of education. So then this court turned to the sentence that's at issue before the court today and said, well, what purpose does that have, right? And this court said, well, the purpose that that has is to make clear that when we're talking about religious private schools, the metric is not operation by a single agency. The metric is not operation by a single set of trustees or by a single religious order. It is a broader term.
Counsel, if I may, are you done?
Yes, Justice Bradley.
I was going to say, are you done, Justice Bradley? But that seems to be kind of circuitous. No, I'm just beginning. No, I'm not done. This case is fascinating, and it appears to me that by some of the questions that maybe there are those who are interested in throwing out 50-year-old precedent or declaring a statute unconstitutional, but neither of the parties seem to be arguing for that. So I want to return to what's before us, and that's a certified question. Now, this isn't our case. This is the Seventh Circuit who's asked us a discrete question. And I think as a template, all would agree that the First Amendment requires neutral criteria. I mean, that's just so boilerplate and so elementary. So here's the question that the Seventh Circuit asks us to answer, as they then will take back the case and decide some of these difficult questions. The question is, must the state superintendent rely exclusively on neutral criteria such as ownership, control, and articles of incorporation, or may the superintendent also take into account the school's self-identification in sources such as website or filings with the state? And quite frankly, I hear you answering this narrow question is no, the state superintendent does not have to, must, is not required exclusively to rely on ownership control and articles of incorporation. Is that your answer? Do I understand that?
Yes, you understand that correctly.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you to take a not a little bit of a leap, because it's both an argument written and oral today. Is that your understanding of your opponent's position, that it's not exclusively that? That is, that the state superintendent must rely exclusively on neutral criteria as ownership control and articles of incorporation.
Well,
what's your understanding of your, or can it look to other sources other than, other neutral sources other than what's been set forth in the first part of that question?
I'm not sure I'm entirely clear, because I think, and this I believe goes to a quest or to a point that Justice Dallet made, that if there are statements within articles of incorporation or other corporate documents, it's unclear to me how St. Augustine would say that those should be considered.
Did you hear your opposing counsel say, yes, you can look in certain instances at websites? In fact, that's what he did with the Hope Schools, as I recall, which I thought was kind of fun.
He did say that today. That is perhaps different than what my understanding was of their argument earlier.
Well, I don't know. I look at page 31 of his brief, and page 31 says essentially the same thing. It indicates the following. In the context of this case, you can look at Professions by St. Augustine, professions such as the City of God, right, counsel? you can look at the Professions of St. Augustine, and then he looks in the brief, in making that request, it professed it was an independent Catholic school, not affiliated with the Archdiocese. And so he goes beyond the articles of incorporation. He looks at the websites, as he did with the Hope School. So I don't know why his argument is any different than I saw in the brief today, that it is, you're not tied to just articles of incorporation. I mean, for heaven's sakes, we don't even have those on the record. So how can you be tied to it in this case, right? Other than comments about what the articles say, oral comments about what the written document says, right? That's what we have in this record.
So if, just to make sure I'm thinking it through, I think what they're arguing is that I want to speak to what we're arguing. And
okay, I know what you're arguing. I don't see in answering this discrete question as to whether or not it must be exclusive, since we don't even have the articles in the record, tied to those documents, you know,
right,
the documentation, you know.
And I think perhaps the distinction is what is the question we're trying to answer, right? And so when we talk about professions, and this is what this court said in Holy Trinity, professions as to denominational affiliation, right? And I think this gets us back to the language of the statute itself and the operative question. And so I think perhaps what Your Honor has recognized is they did say in their application, we are an independent Catholic school. And from that, they're saying we're not affiliated with the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, so therefore we are not affiliated with the same religious denomination. But when they identify themselves as a Catholic school, as a Roman Catholic school, what this court held in Holy Trinity is that that's the that dispositively answers the statutory question. And so then for the government officials to nevertheless say, we're sorry, we can't consider your self-professed denominational affiliation, we must instead demand further inquiry, would be for government officials, not the religious organization itself to draw that connection.
Counsel, I must have been unclear in my question because the answer was much longer than than I expected. I wonder, is this, do you know, this again, this isn't our case. This is the Seventh mm-hmm. Circuit case. But in looking at the Free Lake Supplemental Appendix and at the affidavit of Laura M. Variel, mm-hmm. It has as its first attachment a letter dated November 10, 2015, which indicates the following, that St. Augustine identifies itself as a Roman Catholic school, and then it gives the web address of stagustinschool.net. I punched that stagustinschool.net, and it says, it indicates that the school is moving. It appears to a different school district. So is this, or maybe a different school district. I'm not all that familiar with the school districts in that area, but is this case moot? Do you know?
I don't know the answer to that question, Your Honor. But what I would like to say and just stress is for this court to consider what adopting St. Augustine's interpretation would look like in the next case that is the usual case, right? So let's say, for example, a private Mormon school applies for transportation benefits. It says, we believe we're entitled to these benefits. To our knowledge, the only other school in the district that's receiving benefits is a Catholic school. If St. Augustine's position is correct, the government officials would have to say, sorry, we know you identify as a Mormon school. They outwardly identify themselves as a Catholic school. We can't consider any of that. Instead, what we're going to need you to do is to provide paperwork, corporate paperwork, talking about your internal structure. We're going to need to look at the corporate paperwork about the structure of the other school and any parent denomination. That position, if I may just briefly conclude, is not consistent with the statute itself. It's not consistent with the Constitution. The only thing that it is consistent with is with St. Augustine receiving benefits. But this court should not let the single facts of this unusual case obscure the plain answer to the certified question. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Chief Justice Ziegler. With all due respect, I think my friend misunderstands and misstates our position. We are not asking, in fact, we are saying that the state may not evaluate and investigate the details of our religious position in bona fides. It must simply accept it. If we say we're religiously distinct, we are religiously distinct. The only thing that the state can do is determine whether or not we are affiliated with St. Gabriel's. And affiliation under the dictionary definition means closely connected. In answering that question of whether we're closely connected, only neutral and secular criteria can be considered. This brings us to the certified.
Before you go on, I just want to make sure I'm understanding this part of your argument. So, is Catholic a denomination?
No, it in terms of the application of Vanco to the statute here, the use of the word Catholic does absolutely no work in determining whether or not schools are affiliated and within the same denomination, because the state, as opposed to, you know, religious thinkers, is precluded from attempting to ascertain what that means. It must accept what religious adherents say. So if the Missouri Synod Lutherans and the Wells Lutherans say they're distinct, they're distinct. If the St. Augustine and the Archdiocese say they're distinct, as they do, they are distinct. Whether or not they use the term Roman Catholic. To admit of anything else is to penalize religious adherents for taking a position that they have a different understanding of this term. And it is inevitably to entangle the state in making these judgments, because even if it makes them superficially, even if it makes them based on an assumption, which my friend consistently does here, she says Catholic means Catholic, without recognizing, as I think some members of the court pointed out, that that necessarily involves a religious judgment. And that's what can't be made, because as Justice Rogensack points out, if that was made, then we would have a problem under Espinosa and Trinity Lutheran. What I think the Vanko court was trying to do is read the statute to avoid that problem by putting religious schools and secular private schools on an equal footing and avoiding penalizing someone for being religious or for making a religious judgment. And the way I think
I just want to ask one more time, because I want to make sure I'm understanding again. So I think what you said is that Catholic is not a denomination.
Catholic is not a denomination for purposes of the statute. I mean, to be sure, religious people use Catholic to loosely describe a denomination, but that's a religious judgment that the state may not make and which Vanko prohibits.
I just want to ask a quick question, Counselor. It seems like a lot of the work here in the argument that you're making is done by the word affiliated with. And I think appropriately so. The affiliated with seems to have a connotation of some sort of formal organizational relationship, which I think is what you're talking about here. That denomination, whatever it means, and however you define it, certainly it is a bit nebulous, but it is a defined term it's a term that's used elsewhere in the statutes as well, as some sort of form, some sort of association of some sort, but that there has to be some sort of formal, may not be the right word, but some sort of organizational relationship between the two. In that basically what you're asking us to do is to limit our inquiry to that, which would be relatively neutral, in terms of the things you could use to consider that. Is that a fair characterization, or would you not say that?
No, I think that is a fair characterization. That's exactly what we're saying. And so I think what the Vanko court was trying to do is was trying to take 121.54 and say that we're going to interpret this statement about religious denominations not having overlapping attendance areas in the same way as we determine interpret the earlier sentence that an attendance area is an attendance area approved by the school board in which a school is located, and say that, look, there's no overlapping attendance areas for anyone who is sponsored by the same sponsoring organization. And in assessing Holy Trinity's extension of that, in assessing this, it's those formal organizational ties that are the only things that we can look at. We can't decide what Catholic means or assume it.
All right. Thank you very much. The oral arguments in this case are concluded. I would ask my fellow members of the court to meet in closed conference at 10 after 11. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.